My name is Johnny Numb. It's 5:42 p.m. on Monday, February 12th. Approximately 7 hours ago, some thing attacked the city. I don't know what it is. If you found this podcast, I mean, if you're listening to this right now, then you probably know more about it than I do. Whatever it is, it killed my co-host, Billy Crash, and many, many others. We've crashed into downtown Harrisburg, and we've taken shelter underneath this bridge. The military has begun bombing the creature, and we're caught in the middle. Okay, ready for another episode of The Last Knock? And okay, come on out, Billy.
Woohoo!
I'm sorry I
Yay!
said that. Billy Crash is very much alive and well.
Woohoo! I made it under the bridge! Why am I in Harrisburg? This place is a shithole! Get me out
I believe the proper term is war zone,
Oh,
Bill.
okay, because I'm like. I'm glad the monster's attacking here. It's doing the city a favor. I'm kidding.
Gonna say I love you, Billy.
Yeah,
I love
love you too, Johnny. Rack 'em and pack 'em, we're Phantoms at 15.
And in case you haven't picked up on what our topic is this evening, we are going to be doing a Franchise of Fear episode. Very recently, we saw the release of the Cloverfield Paradox, quite surprisingly. Another entry into the Cloverfield universe, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever.
So, and that makes a trilogy. But is this really a trilogy? Do these films link up at all? Or do they link up well, I guess we should say. We're going to discuss all three of the movies so far because apparently there's another one planned for later this year.
Yeah, which people are wondering if J.J. Abrams is joking or not, because he said it's gonna have like zombies or something like that, and everybody's like, "What are you talking about?" So who knows? Maybe he's eating mushrooms. I have no idea what's going on.
It's possible that would explain a lot. But in any case, Bill, what are your general impressions of let's go to 2008's Cloverfield, the Matt Reeves film that was written by Drew Goddard, and I forgot Drew Goddard wrote that film, so.
Oh yeah, he did, and I love it, man. I'm a big hyper, Gojira fan, Godzilla, and I think this is the best monster movie ever made. The original
Are you
Cloverfield. I'm not kidding.
really? Okay.
I love it. It's on my list of best horror movies. Every time I watch it, I'm just sucked in. They captured. It was great because after, a post 9/11 New York City, having it come under attack and creating that feel of, are we, terrorists at work? What's going on? When they're hiding in the one store, convenience store, and the smoke's going by, and it was so well crafted. Like, I didn't realize like the whole movie's like green screen until, I saw the behind the scenes, and I was like, holy crap. And it had this great real feel to it, and I think that's why I know a lot of people didn't like it, because they didn't like the characters, but I really enjoyed the characters because they did seem shallow and whatnot, and then they come together and it's like, no, we have to do this, we have to save this person, and I thought that was great, and it was admirable, and they did everything they could, but it just had this great suspenseful feel throughout, and I just really loved it. I got into it big time.
Well, what if you could give like a synopsis of the plot, Bill? I
Sure.
guess it's pretty. You could easily summarize it in like a sentence or two.
Something has found us, which is the tagline for the film. And if you remember the movie poster, which looked great, it has a Statue of Liberty at night without a head. And that sort of sucks. And it's a group of young people. They're having a party in the city because the one friend's heading off to Japan as an executive. And it's his going away party when the city comes under attack by that something. And it's captured. It's a found footage film. I think one of the best ever made as well. It's captured on video. HUD, who's just freaking amazing in it, what a great character. And a lot of people are like, well, if I was being attacked by a monster, I'd put the video camcorder down. But I know a lot of people who wouldn't, you know?
Okay.
And so I did, you know, that didn't bother me at all. And they try to escape the city, and then they realize one of their friends is trapped. It's still alive. And let's go get our friend. And it's like, well, we're going in the wrong direction. We're going towards the monster, this creature, whatever it is from another planet. Yep, I know, but got to do it. So they do. And dot, dot, dot.
So it was sort of, for you, Bill, it was like a mix of like spectacle and character, kind of, would you say?
Yeah, just like I just loved the realism with the military element to it, the panic element, people's reactions. It just felt very natural and, you know, real. And Ms. Kaplan's in it, and she's always gorgeous and delicious and amazing. But they drummed up this suspense and terror that I just really felt the whole way through. You know, once we got to know the characters a little bit at this seemingly mundane, you know, going away party from a bunch of millennials to another. And then it became something, you know, horrific. And I thought the tension was palpable throughout. You know, they're facing the uncanny, and that element of suspense about what's in the dark, what's around the next turn. I really felt it. It was great.
Yeah. Okay. You know, Bill, I hadn't watched this movie in years, and I know it came up a couple times on the show where I expressed my controversial middle of the road take on it.
Yeah, and that's true. And if I may say, it's either a love or hate film, and you're like one of the few people I think on Earth, in this dimension anyway, like it's right in the middle, you know.
Well, you know what's funny, Bill, is since it had been so long since I watched the movie, I decided to brush up on it again for this show. And I can say that my opinion has shifted quite a bit. I am now in the hate it camp of a Cloverfield.
Why do you hate it, Johnny? Lizzie Kaplan, man. T.J. Miller is HUD.
Well, I wanted to kill HUD throughout the movie, actually. He hung around way too long. Lizzie Kaplan, I loved her character. I felt the worst for her of all because she was just kind of the third wheel, and she wasn't even supposed to be there. And HUD even like pokes the camera in her face and is like, oh, geez, well, you weren't even supposed to be here.
Yeah, I know. That like, thanks.
That sucks, doesn't it? Yeah. You look like an avocado had sex with an even uglier avocado.
Wow.
Hat tip to Deadpool. Yeah. But part of my problem, Bill, and, you know, apparently theaters were posting notices about the... Yes. The effects of the shaky cam, and I had seen, you know, found footage movies prior to Cloverfield, and I didn't have it didn't affect my physiological constitution, but when I rented it recently and watched it again, I was getting motion sick watching this movie.
Really?
Yeah, and that is the only other time that's happened to me while watching something is when I saw the trailers for Hardcore Henry.
Oh, man. Love that movie, too. And everybody else seems to hate it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I'm never going to watch that movie because if the trailers made me feel like nauseous, I can only imagine how to actually watch it. And regardless of how good the movie is, I don't think it's I just get the feeling I'm going to be sick for an hour and a half or whatever.
Charlton Copley kills it as always, man. He just totally owns that film, man.
It's not due to a lack of interest on my part. I'm just looking out for my physical well-being, and I had this that was the problem I had with Cloverfield this last time. I was shocked that, like, almost from the get-go I was feeling sick watching this movie because of the camera moving and all of these odd angles and everything, and it never stops moving for 75 minutes before the credits kick in.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, part of me is like, do I hold that against the movie? And I'm like, well, I think, yeah, I do, because, you know, I've seen other found footage movies that didn't have that effect on me. hey, maybe it's a good, hey, maybe they did a good job of making a movie that genuinely makes you physically sick, but I would never watch it again because of
Wow.
that effect it had on me. But on the other side of things, Bill, and I know you brought this up in your sort of a brief assessment there, I take it you thought the you thought the post 9/11 commentary was kind of well taken in the film. Like they did a good job, I guess, of not making it seem exploitative, perhaps, of that incident.
No, not at all. I just felt that it had that, you know, maybe because of what they saw, what happened at 9/11, they used it to their advantage, much like, oh my gosh, his name escapes me, special effects makeup artist who, oh my gosh, served in Vietnam.
Savini.
Jeez Louise, Palko, Greg Palko, just punch me in the face. Yeah. Tom Savini, you know, he created a lot of his special effects makeup based on what he saw from the carnage of Vietnam. And I thought they created that real feel. And what I really loved was all the characters already had that built-in terror. It's like, oh, man, we were here for 9/11 and we made it. And holy shit, it's happening again. Mm-hmm. So you had that freak out and... I thought that was really, really cool. It just felt genuine. It wasn't over stylized, which has been killing so many horror movies for me lately. So I thought the cinematography worked really, really well, light and shadow. And it just, again, they created this element of suspense that just carried through. And I just really felt it. Not like you, where you were getting ill. Actually, the shaky cam didn't bother me at all. I thought it just added to the whole element of realism, which I really enjoyed.
You know, Bill, it's weird because I probably watched the movie like almost 10 years ago the first time. So maybe in that time, my physiological makeup has changed in a way that's made that sort of thing unpalatable. So maybe I'll have to watch Quarantine again to see if that has the same, has a similar effect on me, because I've watched that film a bunch of times and it's never done. You know, I've been able to watch it without getting sick. So I watched the Blair Witch Project not too long ago and it didn't do anything to me. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, that was more, I mean, you know, you have, you know, the character HUD and whatnot, you know, people are running a lot, you know, it's like, you know, so the camera's going to move. And so I, you know, like I said, I didn't mind it. I thought it was great for that. And it just added to the, oh man, something's really going on around here. So
yeah, and you know, Bill, I think a big problem, I know you liked how the characters got together, ultimately sort of banding together for a shared cause, kind of.
Yeah, well, they didn't really have a choice. I mean, they did. They could have let their one friend go off, Bob, but they were like, ah, oh, crap, you know, we know the other person too, and, you know, they're a friend, and, you know, what are you going to do? Be like, Johnny's stuck under the bridge. Fuck Johnny, man. You know, it's like, you know, like, no, man, I'm going to get Johnny. You're not with me? Fuck you. Like, I don't care. This is me. I'm okay. Everything's cool. I'm not crazy, but I'm going back. Yeah, right. You know?
Yeah, and you know, and the way you say that, Bill, I believe you, you know? And if
Thank
you were
Johnny.
The one, yeah, if you were the one trapped under that bridge in the Harrisburg war zone, you know, I would be coming to get you too.
Thanks, Johnny. Otherwise, I'd haunt your ass.
Don't worry, I'll get Zelda Rubinstein to clear my apartment for me.
Wow. this house is clean. Sorry, go ahead.
Little Carol Ann, do you hear me? little Cloverfield Ann, do you hear me? But I think, you know, I don't disagree with what you're saying, because I do think they developed the characters. I think my issue was, and maybe this speaks to a bias, I hated those yuppie motherfuckers the first time I watched the movie, and I hated them even more the second time I watched it. So I was like, I can't even get behind you, your quest here. So I'm kind of like shut out right out the gate with this movie, regardless of the spectacle of it, like right. the CG and stuff and the design of it, I think is, like you said, Bill, it's very good callback to kind of the kaiju films. It doesn't explain a lot of the mystery is kind of left a mystery as to what this thing is, why it's attacking, and
which I thought was awesome.
It kind of keeps that mysterious. I can get behind that, but I could not get behind the quote unquote hero's plight, basically, because I didn't like any of them. I felt bad for Lizzie Kaplan. Lizzie Kaplan right. was the only one I liked, and she was sort of painted as the disposable basket case in the end. So,
No, I can't disagree with that. But what was really cool was it's continuous footage. Okay, it's not cut. It's not edited. It was discovered. So it's a Department of Defense tape that they found that shows elements of this creature. So it's about, you know, four people, whatever people, you know, and they, you know, they got this stuff on film, you know, and this is how it started. This is where it ended. That's it. So it's almost like the characters are just like a conduit for, you know, for just this creature attacking the city. And it's like they got some elements of it and they went to try and get their friend and, you know, whatever happened. The cool thing I thought was it was realistic in that regard, where we didn't get to know these people in depth. You know, how shallow were they? How courageous were they? Are they really heroic? Are they just people caught in a situation? And, you know, this is what happened. And that's what I thought it was more of, and that's what I liked about it. You know, it didn't seem contrived in any way.
So you're saying more so because they didn't paint the characters as a specific type, like the clean cut heroes or villains see in some other movies. Okay, all right.
Yeah, there was no, you know, archetypes, any of that crap, because that would have just mean the whole thing was like pretentious and conjured. And in this case, the way they created the characters, it had a genuine feel to it. So I really admired that. And I think that's what heightened my feelings of suspense and, you know, whatnot, because of it just felt like, yeah, these are just people at a party and they recorded this thing and it got really, really ugly.
Well, and I think that goes to another point, Bill, and I think it's something we're going to return to in this conversation of the movies, is the marketing approach to the Cloverfield films. I don't know. Did you see this one in the theater or did you see it on video afterwards?
Boy, that's a great question. Did I see Cloverfield in the theater?
It was quite successful.
Yeah, it was. I can't recall if I went to the theater to see this thing.
Okay.
Shit. I was going to go to the theater to see the Cloverfield Paradox, and then I was like, what? What do you mean it's on? What do you mean it's on Netflix right in front of my face? What's going on? But that's another story.
Yeah, it is. But I think there was a real sense of, because J.J. Abrams, I guess it was kind of, he was the producer, and it's kind of his brainchild in a way, filtered through these other filmmakers. And Cloverfield was not even, what was it, a name of a street he lived on or something like that? I feel like that's...
Something like that, you know, from what I remember. Which I think is great, because it's like, you know, a lot of times when, you know, I write a screenplay, you know, people are like, well, what's your title? And it's like, well, that doesn't sound like a horror movie title. Or if I heard that title, I wouldn't know what it meant. And it's and then you see like movies like Cloverfield come, like, what the hell is that? But then you see the poster and it's like, holy crap, you know, Statue of Liberty's head's missing. What's going on? And it's like, okay, so it's not, you know, some drama or about a town called Cloverfield, you know, and it worked. It had a great word of mouth. You know, people were complaining about it, which I think worked too, because they were complaining, like, you know, you were earlier, where it was affecting them on a physiological level. And, you know, they had the warnings in the theaters, like you said, you know, like, you know, shaky cam warnings. And, you know, I think once you hear, you know, words getting out like on something like that and people are complaining and all, like, that just heightens other people's desires to go see it. So.
Oh, absolutely. It goes back to the, you know, the saying, no publicity is bad publicity, basically.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, for what it's worth, I think the consensus, the critical consensus on Rotten Tomatoes is a certified fresh rating for the film. So you're definitely in the majority with the opinion on general opinion toward the film. Mm-hmm. I was thinking it could go either way when I rewatched it, and that physical element sort of got the ball rolling wrong. Mm-hmm. And then I just felt like it was like I felt the same things I felt the first time I watched it.
Gotcha.
Only I wasn't sick, so that led me to put it in the middle more than
yeah,
more
no,
the,
no.
less than in the red. So yeah,
I get it. But you know, the giant monster attacking the city subgenre is like pretty much like, you know, you either have King Kong or Godzilla. And, you know, the good Godzilla movies are, you know, long gone. And, you know, people who loved that stuff as a kid, you know, it's like we haven't had that in forever. You know, we had the, I guess, semi possibly decent Godzilla movie with Bryan Cranston in it for about 10 minutes. And yeah, I know. I mean, like, you know, but like, what are you going to do? Hang your hat on that? Or like, you know, King Kong 2 Electric Boogaloo? I mean, like, what are you going to do? You know, so.
Well, Kong Skull Island was a lot of dumb fun, in my opinion.
I still haven't seen it because I've never been a Kong fan, but
it's pretty silly. But I thought it was a lot of fun. Mm. But you know, Bill, I'll agree with you on that point. If Cloverfield had been done in a non-found footage way, and I know that's like the central. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the hook that the film rests on. So I don't know how you would do a non. Found footage Cloverfield, but you know, I liked the monster element of it. Mm-hmm. And I actually loved the little baby spidery things that would
the
show
fleas
up
on it. Yeah, that was great. I thought it was a beautiful something extra, you know, that they added.
Yeah, those things actually creeped me out because I was like, oh, I don't like spiders to begin with. So, and the way they made them look was like, oh man, I would be reaching for a fire axe trying to just chop those things down mm-hmm. to size. But
yeah, I mean, think about it, you know, like other than like, you know, Godzilla 1953 and all, like so many of these you know, monster attacking the city movies are just like, you know, like, oh, whatever, you know, here he is walking through a guy in a suit walking through a model set. Mm-hmm. And you know, it just, you know, it was cool, and you wished, you know, I always wished that I was the guy in a Godzilla suit walking around smashing these models. It's like, that's awesome. But, you know, like, even as a kid, you know, there was just, like, this hokiness to it, and I didn't feel that hokiness with Cloverfield at all.
Okay. Well, fair enough, man. Well, the, maybe we could move on to the next iteration of the Cloverfield series, such as it were, which is 10 Cloverfield Lane from 2016. This film takes a markedly different track from the original Cloverfield.
Yeah, a little bit.
yeah, it definitely whittles down the cast. It changes up the scenario. And for a while, you're kind of wondering, yeah, well, how does it, you know, how does this tie into the original Cloverfield? It's essentially the tale of a nurse played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yep.
And she's evacuating the city for some reason. And when she's out driving in the country after ignoring or hanging up on her boyfriend, who she doesn't want to talk to, she's involved in a car wreck, after which she finds herself captive or saved in an underground bunker built by the cuddly and foreboding John Goodman. And also on hand is Michael Gallagher from the John Belko Gallagher. Experiment. I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry.
It's all right. It's about time you screwed up a name. It's usually me.
Yeah, I was going to say, when we do the Scream Outs, Bill, maybe I should.
Go to hell, man.
but in any case, it's essentially for a long period of time, it's just how these three characters are interacting and under the speculation of what is happening outside, is there an apocalyptic incident going on? I'm fucking up left and right.
Yeah, man. Or is John Goodman as Howard? Has he lost his mind?
Yeah, he's imprisoning these two people against their will for some unknown reason. The film keeps things hanging for a good long time, and that's one of the reasons why I really find it very strong. But Billy, what do you think of 10 Cloverfield Lane? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. First of all, John Goodman, he owned this movie. He was so incredible in the role, and he always is. You know, he even brought him a toe because they wanted a toe, and my little Big Lebowski joke. But anyway, no, it was great because, you know, again, with horror, you know, you have, you know, in the first one, you have this creature that's like, how the hell are we going to fight this? The military's shooting it with everything they got, and it's not coming down. Not a good sign. And in this one, it's like, you know, you have that outside mystery. It's an intimate setting, three people. You know something's going to happen. You know, Michelle is kept against her will. And, you know, was she saved? Is she being held captive? She's freaked out, rightfully so. John Goodman, you know, his character, Howard, he's not the best at, you know, with social etiquette. And I'm like, you know, like, hey, don't worry. Here, you know, here's the news reports, you know, like nothing like that, you know, going on. But apparently something's going on outside, and I think that's what people, you know, really loved about it, and I did too. I did enjoy this film. The only thing is, I know for a lot of people, they thought it fell apart at the end.
Really?
Yeah, from people I heard, they were like, "Oh, I'm so disappointed when she went outside," or blah 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 blah. You know, and
okay.
But apparently you weren't, but. To a degree, you know, I didn't really mind it. I mean, I still gave it a high score for me, you know, 3.5 stars out of 5, which is, you know, pretty damn good. But I know a lot of people really, you know, if they hated Cloverfield, they loved 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, and you know, Bill, maybe it's a matter of approach that I like the film a lot better. I think the opening sequence is pretty fucking dynamite, like up to the point where she flies off the road and then the credits start. I love that. I am a big fan of the confined setting films. You know where you have just a couple characters like trapped for whatever reason in some, you know, extenuating circumstance, and I thought they did a fantastic job juggling just three characters and building a nice feature film. It felt a lot like an episode of, I'm going to say, The Twilight Zone to me.
Yeah, it's not hard to argue.
I mean, it had that element of mystery. I mean, I guess you could call back to the Twilight Zone episode, The Bunker, which takes a different course, of course, than 10 Cloverfield Lane. But it's sort of the same idea of, okay, well, what if there's this threat of something happening? You need to get downstairs out of harm's way in like this walled-in bunker. And then, well, you know, who's the worst enemy? It's the people. Despite, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men, you have all of these resources. You have pretty much anything at your fingertips to keep you occupied, to keep you nourished. But the breakdown comes in how, you know, like you said about the John Goodman character, not having good people skills and potentially ulterior motives, like that breakdown of personalities and just human flaws.
Yeah, because for him, he was in survival mode, and it was just like, you know, and totally understood. But, you know, she had no clue what was going on.
That didn't
really help, you know. So, he blew it in that regard. But then we wouldn't have had a movie, you know. But
yeah, and I do like how they stretched the mystery. Dan Trachtenberg is the director, and I think that was his debut, actually. And it was mighty impressive because I think a lot of other filmmakers would have probably just kind of leaned on the accelerator and dropped the more subtle things that happen in that film, you know, in favor of something a bit more, I don't know, beat you over the head kind of with the.
Oh, hell yeah.
With your point, yeah.
So how do you think this one linked up with the original?
Well, Bill, you know, like I said, the film starts off with like people are evacuating this, you know, whatever city for some reason. So maybe it's the threat of the Cloverfield monster. Maybe it's happening at the same time as the yuppies from the original film are witnessing what's happening, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead just got a leg up and just was like, I don't have anybody I need to account for. I don't have any relatives. I just have my boyfriend and I'm on the outs with him. So I'm just going to jet out of here. Because, you know, I don't know if we want to tread into spoiler territory about the last act or not, because that would kind of. If you want to leave it alone, we can leave it alone.
Oh, I think we could leave it alone there, but I think that would be the overall tie-in. But still, you know, it left me wondering about. Well, you know, let's go on. Let's move on, man.
Well. Something I liked about her character, Bill, is she's kind of presented as a bit, kind of like she doesn't want to help. I think her boyfriend, who's the voice of Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think he says something to her like about like, why are you so afraid to help people or whatever or something like that. He kind of calls her out on her demeanor, and it's heavily, you know, implied in some way. And then when you get to the end, kind of her arc is kind of I like how it completes the arc for the character, because, you know, she learns to be resourceful. She does learn to rely on herself, but she's also kind of, I don't know, maybe the film is kind of a testament for her being right and not trusting people because of the way things go in the bunker. I don't know about that. Because certainly she puts her trust in the people in the bunker at certain points, or cautiously so, and then maybe it's not entirely founded in the end.
Yeah, yeah. Can't argue that.
But what do you think, Bill, about the? Do you think there's do you feel that there's more connections to the original besides what we were kind of tiptoeing around?
I know a lot of people did some research into it. There, you know, I think one guy, and I didn't check out the article, but you know, there's like 10 links to show how it adds up to how it connects to the original Cloverfield, and to me, it's okay. I mean, you can make, especially now after watching the third one, you could sort of make an argument as to what transpired and what the fourth movie might look like. But
well, Bill, maybe a question I can ask you.
I just don't want to give anything away, really, you know.
No, and this won't. But I guess for you with these movies, because you've seen all of them, obviously. Yeah. Is part of the viewing experience for you trying to piece stuff together, or are you just taking each of these films more or less as kind of standalones, or just taking them on their own merits? And if you see something that connects with the greater universe or whatever, you kind of take it for what it is. Like, how do you feel about that? How do you appraise these movies?
Well, I'm trying to, like, anytime I watch a movie and I like grade it and give it stars, whatever, I'm not, like, you know, going, let's say, I don't know, let's say I gave Alien, you know, 5 stars. It's like, well, I can't give this other movie 5 stars because it doesn't approach the awesomeness of Alien. I take each movie as its own separate world, universe, and everything else. And that's what I did with 10 Cloverfield Lane. I wasn't even looking for connections. I was just so enraptured by the story that I was just enjoying it and where it was going and where it might go. Which was great because, there was suspense and, you know, it was a great mystery. And so for the third one, well, you know, I know we're going to talk about it in a second. When it started to go in particular directions, it was like, okay, I see where there's, they were pretty much, they weren't being subtle about it by any means.
Right.
They threw subtlety right out the window with this one. And and you could automatically, once you learned the Cloverfield paradox, what it was, it's like, oh, I know where this is going now. You know?
Well, and it makes you kind of question, I guess, J.J. Abrams is still one of the producers on the film and on all of these. And, you know, you look at something like maybe the Cloverfield paradox and you wonder, it's like, well, did the producers say that you had to include X, Y, and Z in this one for some reason, you know, to link it up in some way, no matter how perhaps awkward that that connection was.
Yeah, was this a Disney movie, the last one?
Jeez, Bill, I couldn't tell you. I think Paramount was the studio.
Yeah, it was. But for some reason, it had, it was Paramount. And, you know, obviously Bad Robot. But I don't know, man. There was like a Disney quality to it, especially in the third act that made me throw up.
Well, Bill, do you... Because I know I called you the other week, and you were in the midst of watching it, and
it was. You know what was funny about that? Once I resumed the movie, it went completely fucking really downhill. You know, and I was like, "Son of a bitch!" You called right at that apex of. I'm hoping they could pull it out and save it, and then it just went crash, agony of defeat, man. It went crashing down that ski jump and just. Burst into flames.
So, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe this is one we can speak to the marketing, because I believe with 10 Cloverfield Lane, let me see. I did take some notes on that. Actually, I think, the title was revealed like a month before the movie came out, or just a couple weeks before the movie came out, and then there was like a viral campaign.
Because a lot of people were like, is this a sequel? Is this something different? What's going on? And we weren't getting answers as fans, and that just fueled the desire.
Yeah, precisely. And I think... I'm guessing it sounds like there were rumors of a new Cloverfield film coming out this year, but no one kind of, it was like, I think even the cast wasn't aware of when it was going to be unleashed or how it was going to be unleashed. So this was the big thing at the Super Bowl, was the promotion for the Cloverfield Paradox right after the Super Bowl on Netflix. So,
oh no! Here we go.
I don't know if you watched the Super Bowl or not, Bill. I did not. So.
Oh yeah, I did. I'm a football guy.
So what was did you see the I guess the commercial or the teaser for the Cloverfield Paradox?
And yeah, I did.
What did you think?
I'm like, holy shit! When's it coming out, man? That was my response. Little did I know that it was not going. It was funny. It was pulled from having a theatrical release, and that's a bad, bad sign.
Well, was it pulled from a theatrical release? And what were the circumstances? Do you know?
I don't know, but my guess is they did a whole bunch of because it's not, you know, it's not. People are not digging this movie.
No, it's. I think it's gotten the worst reviews of the three films. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and rightfully so. And I think what happened was it was like, this is gonna bomb, and they spent $26 million on it. So, which is actually for the effects that they had in there, which were good, and everything else.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's still, you know, and I don't know how much money they spent on marketing, so you could add to that. And they probably were figuring, it's going to bomb, we're not going to clear, so let's do a different route. And they made a deal with Netflix for a release instead of going direct to video, you know?
You know, it's interesting, Bill, because I didn't really know anything about the backstory, I guess the production backstory and the pre-release backstory. So I was kind of thinking to myself as I was watching it, I was like, you know, I was like, how would this have done if it would have been put in theaters? And I'm sitting there thinking, it probably wouldn't have done well or as well as 10 Cloverfield Lane. honestly. You know, I feel that like the cast was pretty good, honestly. You know, there were a lot of good people in that cast. A lot of capable actors, I think.
Sure, and Zee Zhang. And unfortunately, we didn't see enough of Donald Logue. I mean, who's absolutely phenomenal actor.
Oh, wait, who was he?
He was the guy who was talking, who explained the Cloverfield paradox. Lenin Demons!
Oh, God, that's... Oh, man, all right. Gotcha. You know,
and Zee Zhang, who I adore to no end. God, she's
hyper, and hyper you know, delicious. You know what, Bill? I will say something awesome about her character is believe she's speaking Mandarin the whole film, and she doesn't. They don't make her character speak English at one point.
No, and everybody else had to, you know, understood what she was saying, you know, which is great. So
I thought that was really cool because I was like sitting there watching it with the English subtitles on. I'm like, wait a second, she's the only time she's speaking another language is when she's pronouncing a character's name. Like the captain has a German, like Daniel Brühl has a German name or something like that because he's German.
Schmidt, that was like the most basic. I was like, come on, Schmidt, that's what you could come up with. Oh, man.
Well, you know, and like I was saying, Bill, I thought the production design was good. Like you said, the effects were good.
Yeah, but this is where, you know, you said production design, and that's one of my big problems with the film.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, so if people don't know, what's happening is planet Earth is in a severe energy crisis. You know, go think back to the David Bowie song, you know, We've Got 5 Years. And that's pretty much what it says. We're going to run out of energy completely in 5 years. We have to do something. So they create this giant, internationally create this giant space vehicle, which is supposed to be a particle accelerator, although I never saw one in linear form.
Don't cross the streams, Bill.
Oh, we're going to get to more of that in a minute. We're going to get to more of that in a minute. And so there's a group of scientists, you know, in space, astronauts, cosmonauts combined, you know, from different countries, including Brazil, which was nice. And they're up there, this team staying up there as long as they need to, using as much energy as they have left to create an energy source that the Earth could run on for free forever. And all I kept thinking of with the ship is like, okay, so this happened right now. We have 5 years left. We've got to build something now to get it up there. It was so aesthetically pleasing when it would have been far more functional. And they made it look like it was like built 50, 60 years in the future kind of thing. I don't know. It just didn't feel real. The whole, like, you know, anti-gravity element to it with, you know, the spinning loops. Apparently, you know, some people had issues with that. But this whole thing's a one big working laboratory. It's a particle accelerator. But a particle accelerator, the largest is the Large Hadron Collider in CERN, Switzerland. And it's 17 miles wide. And it's, like, over, you know, 150 feet. You know, high, and I mean, it takes a ton of energy to rock this thing, to get particles to collide, to create whatever they're looking for. Quarks, you know, to emit energy. And it's like, I'm like, this isn't really right. Mm-hmm. And then they finally get the thing working, and then everything shuts down, and suddenly planet Earth is gone. And this is really bothered me the most. They're looking out the portal windows. Where's Earth? Where's Earth? I don't know. Where are we? And I'm like, no one's an astronomer. No one could go, whoa, look at that star. You know what I mean? They couldn't figure shit out. It's like, oh, man. And I could see scientists at home watching this movie going, wanting to kill themselves. They're probably calling the suicide hotline.
Bill, they found Nostradamus in the hull of the ship. Come on.
And they did this weird stuff where, like, you know, at one point there's this room loaded with water and it freezes because it's opened up to space, but it would have boiled because of the extreme cold. And I'm like, come on, man, you know, like, oh. And it just, like, science was just totally abandoned. They didn't do it. They're like, let's make a movie instead of, well, let's make it accurate.
Well, and meanwhile, Bill, and I think.
sorry for rambling, man.
Oh, no, that's fine. I think you made some good points that went over my head, actually. So that's because I've said this before on the show. I am not Mr. Science at all. And I know you're definitely more passionate about, like, if you see something that's wrong, that you know is wrong, you're going to say something, obviously, about that, which is good.
I really wish I had been watching it with a physicist. I wish I wasn't, though, because they probably would have been. I'd probably have to, like, hold them down and call the emergency squad to help them out, because they'd be freaking out.
You know, Bill, my friend Brian, who you met at Monster Mania, he's actually a physicist. I might have to ask him to watch this movie.
Hell yeah, you have to.
Yeah, I don't know if he's. I don't know how invested he is in the Cloverfield
universe. Screw that! Make him watch it. This is for a podcast, man.
It's for science. It's for the internet. But you know, Bill, I thought it was the thing that I took away from the Cloverfield paradox was that when you want to explain away something.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much give yourself free license to fuck around. Just start talking about parallel universes.
Yeah. And you know,
that's kind of like the Deus Ex Machina of screenwriting, I guess, kind of for this sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's what bothered me too, because there were still some things like, okay, if they caused by starting up this machine, you know, some sort of like a rip, a tear, a melding between the two dimensions. And things were crossing over. I mean, I'm cool with that, but to me, it wasn't enough. And they never explained why the ship would have moved from its location to begin with. You know, that didn't make sense to me. I mean, that would have had to have been in orbit, and they were like far removed. That didn't make any sense to me. And then it really started to not make. It could have been a really cool, surreal thing, but it just became very mundane and tropey and almost an action film, and then a very sappy sentimental, oh, don't leave home, don't leave, like, what the hell? Oh my god, I was just freaking dying. It's killing me, man. And I liked and this is one of the coolest names ever, man, Gugu Mbatha-Raw. I mean, freaking, you know, she's awesome, but I don't know, man.
No, Bill, I agree with you. I thought she was really, you know, honestly, I liked all of the, I thought the performances were good.
Yeah, and this is, you know, from director, Julius Ona, who's, you know, a lot of people know for doing, like, you know, music videos and such. And, you know, he's done tons of short films. And here he has this major vehicle, you know, feature vehicle to do. And he did a great job. It's just that the story wasn't there.
Yeah, and the script was by Oren Uziel.
Yep.
And I'm not, and the story was co-concocted by Doug Young. I'm not sure about the the stability of the screenwriting. It was like everybody. I felt like every character had their place. And for the most part, I liked the characters. I was buying into the sort of the urgency of the conflicts they were having mm-hmm. aboard the ship as things got increasingly weird.
Not weird enough, though.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Chris O'Dowd, who kind of brought the comic relief, which is kind of what he does. I always enjoy watching him. You know, it's like I wish he would have just reprised his character from the IT crowd in this movie.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, Bill, science or no science, the film, I felt that the film moved along really well. It did not bore me really at all while I was watching it. I was expecting the worst because I watched it a couple days after everybody else went to Twitter with torches, basically calling for the film to be burned at the stake. So, you know, and I was kind of like, you know what, it has its problems. And
yes.
I was looking at a lot of this. Actually, I was looking more from a screenwriting perspective mm-hmm. in terms of, well, in space, there's only so many ways to kill characters, I guess. Because there was a lot of this, like, okay, we just break off into groups, or some people go off to do something. Someone gets sealed in an airlock, and something horrible happens. That was repeated, I think, a bit too much. In the film, like you mentioned, with the one the compartment that filled up with water and everything.
Yeah, and then you have the sacrificial character, and you're like, oh man.
Yeah, and you know, Bill,
It's almost
this.
like they gave up, and especially in the third act, because I mean, I right from the beginning, I thought it was really cool. I loved the theme, the music was great, and I was like, man, this is really rocking. And it just, I don't know, it's like the third act was like, it's almost like other people did it and they patched it on or something.
Well, and that's why I was like thinking, was that like a post-production decision to put some of that stuff in there, to like really shoehorn some stuff in there to like, oh, hey, remember Cloverfield? Hey, it's Cloverfield. We promise. It's Cloverfield, but
Oh, I
it's not
know.
Cloverfield.
I know. I think that's when I threw up a little in my mouth.
I was really not sure what to make of that ending. It didn't piss me off like apparently it pissed off a lot of people.
It didn't piss me off either, but
But didn't feel natural, I guess.
no, because I'm like, okay, if this is the thing that unleashed Cloverfield, then the whole first installment, the original movie, doesn't make much sense because nobody's talking about how, yeah, I hope that spaceship's working because we're gonna run out of energy. You didn't have that feel to it, and I'm like, oh man. And but Bear McCreary's music, man, that was my favorite part.
Yeah, that was good.
Bear, yeah,
And
Bear, people who love Bear McCreary's work know it from The Walking Dead, of course, and 10
nice.
Cloverfield Lane. By the
Yeah, and
way,
that's a great score too.
yeah, he's done a lot of great work, even on Europa Report, which if you're, that
Oh
was
boy,
that Europa Report. I mean, that movie had its issues, like where are they keeping all this food? Like, God, that's all I kept thinking. How big's that ship? How long are they out there? Where's the food coming? Where's the food? Like, I was just, but anyway, I'm okay. I'm over it
well,
now.
you know, Bill, the I had a there was a bit of conflict in me. Like I remember after the movie was over, I was like, I liked it. And then as like a couple days went by, and I kind of like some of the stuff started to unravel, I think, in the same way it started to unravel for you kind of a bit sooner. And I think sort of something that's sticking in my craw is it does go again, like 10 Cloverfield Lane, it goes into Twilight Zone territory. It reminded me of the Odyssey of Flight 33, actually.
I like that. Cool. Yeah,
Because
definitely.
that's where the passenger plane, I think, goes so fast it goes back in time, sort of. And then it also reminded me of Life from last year, right down to kind of that ending. So I was like, yeah, I was like, yeah, they tried to do the Twilight Zone thing, but it didn't come off, I don't think, as well as it did in 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, it's almost like these people, like if you want to do people trapped on a spaceship and keep it real and make it a horror movie, go to the one that worked. Go to 1979's Alien and see why it worked and how it worked and the characters and the interaction and what transpired and the atmosphere that was created. And this atmosphere was so clean, and you have characters who are like, I'm sorry, man, you're a scientist, you're chosen for a mission to go out in space and do whatever it takes to save the entire planet. Oh, I don't know if I could leave my kids or what. Like, what? You're like, dude, don't you like what the hell, man? Come on. I just, oh man.
Well, it's like you also have the Space Girl Carlson in the hall. And I gotta say, I really love the introduction of the Space Girl played by Elizabeth Debicki.
Yeah, she rocked, man.
But I was like, kind of, and maybe this is stemming from a lot of the complaints that are out there about this movie. I was like, I was kind of, I thought the her function or her character was kind of muddled, so I was kind of confused because she's kind of this they kind of present her as this linchpin, but I wasn't matching it up with what was going on. And maybe that's just a bit of my inexperience in,
yeah,
it lack of knowledge insofar as the science stuff is concerned that you were explaining earlier.
Yeah, well, it seemed like the writing got a little bit lost, and then they were like trying to, like, you know, fix it like glitches in a computer program with patches that just didn't pay out. And yeah, it was just very glitchy in the end, because I did, you know, I was giving it the benefit of the doubt and liking it a lot more. And then the more I thought about it, like you, I was like, this is just, you know, some people were outright like, this is shit, you know, and whatnot. And I didn't think it was that.
Yeah.
But it was just, it just became a muddled mess. And the way I see the fourth movie is, well, I don't even know. But it should deal with giant Cloverfield-like beasts from the original, and maybe they're alien handlers. You know, I don't know. But
Bill, we already saw that movie. It was called Alien Covenant and Prometheus.
I'm sorry, I just threw up on my mic.
Holy, you're gonna go into the Cloverfield engineers, yeah.
Oh my god. Oh my god. What a mashup. What a mashup. Well, that, Bill, would be.
I'm sort of curious. You know what? Let me do this first. We had two, I wound up sort of in two conversations with people, completely incidental. Mm-hmm. About the Cloverfield paradox, and I thought I would share them because they're two diametrically opposed opinions on the film.
Sure, let's
the
hear
first,
it.
First one comes from our good friend Paul J. Williams via, yes, Facebook. He says, Bill and Johnny, please do a show, or at least a segment, on Netflix and the Cloverfield paradox. Ask and ye shall receive, Paul.
Damn straight.
I'm equal parts in awe of Netflix and its marketing, and angered over how bad the movie is. I'm a huge fan of the first Cloverfield, thought 10 Cloverfield Lane was a little overrated, however, understood the praise. But this new shit is everything being written about it. Derivative, with plot holes all over the place. Parts simply don't make sense. So frustrating.
Plot holes or black holes, Johnny?
Oh, boy, Bill, you just sucked my brain into a vortex.
Yeah, you're going through a wormhole right now, Johnny.
That's the paradox, Bill.
Oh, my God, we got it.
Yeah. In any case, the second comment comes from my cousin through marriage. His name's Kevin Hartman. And he occasionally hits me up on Facebook Messenger about, you know, comic book, sci-fi, sometimes some horror stuff.
What a nerd. What a geek.
And we swap recommendations a lot of the time. So yeah. He said, I mostly liked it. I definitely had a bunch of that's not how that works moments. And I thought we have to tie this to Cloverfield somehow ending was kind of dumb. There are directions I would have rather seen it go. And I would have certainly done things differently as far as events leading up to Cloverfield. Thinking more something like Sphere/Doom, opened wormhole, something eldritch and awful got into the ship from some horrible Cthulhu dimension, end with the escape pod crashing into the sea off Coney Island, like you see at the end of the original Cloverfield.
Which is brilliant.
So, you know, there's two definitely opposite end of the spectrum takes, though Kevin also had his issues with the film, obviously. So,
well, I think Kevin's like a lot of people who are, you know, whether you're a fan of the original Cloverfield or 10 Cloverfield Lane, you wanted the third movie to be awesome. And
oh, of course.
You want to love it, but you can't. And, you know, that's one of the things that really bothered me too, because it's like, I wanted to love it, and it's like basic science is thrown out the window. And once that's done, the whole movie falls apart. It's like watching a police procedural and they're doing police procedure incorrectly. It's like, well, then that element of reality is tossed out the window. Then you're just making your average Hollywood movie that's making up its own truths and realities. So the whole thing has no merit, no real foundation that we could sink our teeth into and feel really afraid if it's really real. And, you know, there you go. And
I suppose that's the rub, Bill, because, yeah, you know, you do a sci-fi movie, and it's like you adhere to some facets of science. If you throw out the science, it's you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, and I think that's, why, Blade Runner, even though it's not a horror, I mean, that's why it's held up and has so much merit, is because of, exploring theme with what if, we created replicants, looked, sounded like us, they were us, they have their own brains, but they only live 4 years, and they're pretty much a biological machine of our own creation. But what if we find humanity within them? And it's like, whoa, that's heavy shit. And and you have a story there, but this one was just I don't know, man.
Well, and I mean, Blade Runner was definitely more about the themes and the characters than the actual science, which I thought was made it more fascinating.
Yeah, but still, the science was valid, and there's been a biological creation, and we're not there, yet. We can't create like some biological robot that's humanoid in appearance and whatnot, but the steps are being laid stone by stone,
Sure.
So yeah, this is just man.
Well, Bill, let's run through the three films we just did. What would you rate Cloverfield on a scale of 1 to 5?
I guess for sake of argument, I have to give it at least a 4.5. No, I love it. I love it. It's in my top, 85 or whatever, best horror films ever made.
4.5 from you is definitely that's definitely up there.
And you didn't, so yours must have dropped from what you originally had it as.
Yeah, I actually originally rated it a 2.5, and
God.
I bumped it down to a 1 after this last
Holy
time.
jeez, mother, God, damn.
Yeah, Lizzie Kaplan, love you, Lizzie Kaplan.
Yeah, who doesn't? Oh.
Yeah, delicious.
Yeah, totally.
And I think, what did you say for 10 Cloverfield Lane, Bill?
3.5.
See, I gave that one a 4. I thought that one
'Cause you're
was
a freak, Johnny, that's why.
oh yeah, feeling like a freak on a leash, Bill.
Yeah.
Feeling like I have no release.
Hey, the camera's not shaky. I like this movie more.
You mean we get actual static shots now? Yay! Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, and what about I'm really curious to hear what you would rate the Cloverfield Paradox.
Because of the element of adventure, and there were so many cool things to it in the acting, blah 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 blah. I'd have to get. I can't go above a 2.
Okay. After I watched it, I logged it as a 3.5 on my Letterboxd account, but I think I'm gonna rescind that down to 3 because of the stuff we were talking about and the feelings of it not holding like days after watching it and feeling like it holds together less and less. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's falling apart like, like a time warp in space. The fabric of time is just, it's unraveling, Johnny.
You know what would have been perfect was if the final shot of the Cloverfield Paradox had been the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man coming out of the clouds.
Dude, that would have killed it, man. I would have given it 6 stars out of 5 for that.
I tried to think of something that couldn't possibly hurt us, Bill. That's the paradox.
That would have been great if, like, Venkman shows up to take it out or something.
We just need to get this sailor laid. Come on. Yeah. Well, anyway, Bill, I think that closes the book on our show on the Cloverfield films until the next one comes out, anyway.
Yeah.
If it comes out at this point.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but do you want to scream into that wormhole, into that vortex, and hope some people hear us out there in internet land?
I do, my friend. And these are wonderful souls that you could find on Twitter. So here you go. The first one is Jennifer Elm, and her Twitter handle is stitched underscore Radis. Don't judge what you don't understand. My rats are my life. She's a horror fan, LGBT, and she says, I post daily horror art, which she does. She's engaged to romantic underscore corpse. And she's a mental health advocate. She's out of San Diego, and you could check her out on Facebook for Anna Paquin fans. The great Gore Blimey.
Yes.
Yes, and you could follow him on Twitter as I am Gore Blimey, podcaster, chili head, archer's addict, Eurovision fan and lover of weird, campy horror movies. He might have loved this one, Johnny. And he's out of Wales, which we love. And check him out. He's an amazing soul. Real Jilly G. She's a Canadian woman, writer, poet. She's into indie film, The Walking Dead, horror, art, music, photography, women's movement. She's an advocate, a survivor. She's Scorpio and Echelon and One Love. And you could see her, read her great work on CrimsonQuintessence.com. Love you, Sister Jilly. The great Stephen Courtney. And you could find him at StephenCourtney79. What is he? He's a geek, a gamer, writer, and a YouTuber, TWD fan, of course, movie buff, all genres, comics, music, etc. And he's the chief operations officer of My Gaming Career, also their Twitter handle. And he's partners with We Are Gamer Born, Fade Grips, and DNR underscore crew. He's out of Charlottetown, Canada, and follow him on YouTube. The awesome Rachel Lauren, and that is R. Lauren Official, 22-year-old New York City singer, songwriter, actress, model, and she was on Oxygen's Next Big Thing. And
holy
rock,
crap.
Yeah, rock is my life. And you could follow her on ReverbNation.com/Rachel Lauren. The awesome, the very cool soul, Thomas S. Flowers.
Yeah.
Live, laugh, scream, and he's a degenerate, but he's really not. He's the author of Planet of the Dead, now available on Amazon. And you could find out more about his work on his super excellent horror site, ThomasSFlowers.com. One hell of an actor. Can't say anything bad about this wonderful man. Owen McEwen, and you could follow him at Owen McEwen Quest. He's an expressive actor with voiceover chops who brings your scripts to life, and that is no lie. He's a graduate of Notre Dame. And he's on a quest for audio drama and indie film. And you could catch him in RY Indie Film. And that's their handle. And also go to his excellent website to see his reels, ownmcewen.com. The phenomenal Tracy underscore TR. She's the chief operations officer of Terror Records Incorporated. She's the owner of the awesome Scream Radio without the E. And she's in the horror radio, wine, reading, bacon. I'm in love with her. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
Horror introvert. I can't believe she's an introvert, but she is. And you could follow her, her favorite song on iTunes. And go to tracy.co for more. And I have two more left, Johnny. The excellent author, L. Roy Aiken. And that is L underscore Roy underscore Aiken. I realize I do this too fast and I don't drink before I do it. Cottonmouth, author of Bleeding Kansas and Grace Among the Dead, from the most brutal zombie epic you haven't read yet, in Kindle and paperback from Severed Press. And you could check out his site at as rockinroy.blogspot.com. He's out of Monta Vista, Colorado. And finally, RJN. Who is that? RJN the second, 2ND. Thinking Outside, The Tesseract, Despicable, E.E. Well, Excuse Moi, You Wanted the Best, You Found It, Living the Ambient Dream, tweet him if you got him, he's out of Texas, and he's just cool as hell. So there's the scream outs, Johnny. Where can people find you, man? Well, yeah, you got a scream out?
Yeah, can I scream out to movies, films, and flicks, Bill?
Yes!
You know what?
I
was listening to a backlog of episodes from them because I tend to only update my podcasts about once a month.
I'm the same way, man.
I believe it was during their Mayhem and Belko Experiment show where they had after their commercial break, they came back and they were talking about the very fact that we mispronounce their name all the time. So they were
I do it. Me. Movies, films, and flicks. There we go. I got it.
And also MFF Horror Corner.
Yes.
Mr. John Lovingood. And
great.
I just thought it was funny because they gave us like 3 minutes of like a plug where they were just like mispronouncing stuff and switching words around.
Yeah,
so it's like, so we're both assisting each other and not getting more listeners. So I like that. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's the way great. To do it.
I love how we can help each other out like that. So anyway, Bill, where can people find you?
People could find me as Crash Palace on Twitter, also as Billy Crash on Instagram, and go to CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and wonderful articles by wonderful people like you. And I hope John Levingood sends me an article soon. That would be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And Thomas S. Flowers, because I've done stuff for them. It'd be great. I'd love to share some of their work. And you can find this show on iTunes, and please leave a rating, starred rating, whether you love us or hate us. And also leave your comments about the Cloverfield franchise on CrashPalaceProductions.com. Johnny.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my movie reviews in addition to Crash Palace Productions at loudgreenbird.com. Good company with Frisco Kid TX and mm-hmm. Dixie Fairy.
Oh, man, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, Loud Green Bird's awesome.
Yeah, I need to write something for them. So I need to write something new for them. So yeah.
Yeah, that's excellent. Definitely check out that site, ladies and gentlemen. And before Cloverfield steps on your head.
Well, I was gonna say, Bill, enjoy your midnight screening of Blade 2.
Wow.
Enjoy. I'm sorry, I'm doing these TJ Miller references to Deadpool that are not they aren't landing at all, so yeah.
No, that's fine, man. That's fine. I'm getting them.
Billy, I would say I wanted to go with you, but I don't.
Well, Johnny, I think it's time to rack 'em and pack 'em.
All right, we're Cloverfield Kaijus at 5 or some shit. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Remember. Okay. Phantoms at 15, Johnny.
All right, I'll get it right next time. I promise.
Oh, whatever.
There won't be a next time. I love you, Bill. I love you.
Have a good one, Johnny. Love you
too.
Bye.
Bye.